First hour in the books here on the Kevin Sheehan Show right here on the Team 980. We're always live and free on the Odyssey app as well. Lynnell Willingham sitting in for Kevin at about 11:30. Danny Ruye, one half of Grant and Danny over on The Fan, going to join us, give us his thoughts as the Commanders opening up voluntary OTAs today, the full 90-man roster on the field at the same time, rookies, free agents, all for the media to see. We'll get Danny Ruye's thoughts on what he's expecting from the burgundy and gold coming up in 2025. Also, as we move throughout this 11 o'clock hour, two very prominent NFL analysts, but two differing opinions on the Washington Commanders and what they will be in 2025. We'll let you get to that as well. We're live on YouTube. You check this out in the chat. Say what's up. Our guy Eric Leach saying, iron with the heat. You damn right, and brought the heat. Talking about the Washington Nationals, your confidence level as a fan base that this group will turn it around, that Mike Rizzo and company will get begin to receive the fruits of their labor of wearing it on their chin for the past couple of years. Third fewest wins in Major League Baseball since 2019. So, how long does this rebuild take? This is an interesting perspective we're about to get. Our guy Kurt in Hagerstown telling us to relax. I think I may agree with you. What's going on, Kurt?
Yeah, man. I mean, when we made that deal, when we got rid of Soto, which I thought was an excellent deal, we got a lot of good prospects. I did want the catcher from San Diego that we didn't get in that deal. But that being said, all these guys are babies, infants, man, in their development stage. Woods is a rookie. We haven't even seen Hassel yet. House, Abrams, Cruz. I mean, this is a awesome core that we're building. When we made that deal, I wrote down 2027, 28, 29. Why waste money on a big-name pitcher that we can't compete with the Dodgers? Because that's really who we're going against right now. We can't compete with the Dodgers. So keep doing what we're doing. I think we're right on schedule, man. Why waste money? Like, look what the Phillies have spent in their payroll, and what have they got from it? What we don't want to do is we don't want to look like Baltimore, where you build a nice young core, but you don't support it when they become great. And that's not what Rizzo does. If you look back at his track record, he knows when to make the big moves. He knows when to strike. So just let the man do what he does. He's one of the best at his job. When we get to the point when we're competing for the pennant, he'll go out there. He'll get a shilling and a Randy Johnson, two pitchers and a reliever, because that's all we need, really. Once these boys grow up, man, and become in their prime, watch what happens, man. I'm not worried at all. Zero
worry.
That's
a very interesting perspective, Kurt, and I do hear what you're saying. I actually would take it a step further. I think they're a little bit closer maybe than you gave them credit for. I agree with your timeline, right? You're talking 27, 28. I think if the youngins, like I said with Britt on the phone, if the youngins continue to show progress throughout this season, the consistency is the big thing I'm looking for with Mackenzie Gore and Jake Irvin. But as far as Abrams and Wood, and hopefully Cruz is able to hit it well when he comes back, first of all, they're going to have a dilemma in the outfield, Kurt.
Hassel, man. People don't even know about. Everywhere that kid's gone, man, he's just going to be one of those guys that hits 300. He's going to be what people love in this town, because he reminds me of Anthony Rendon.
Just gets on base.
Once he gets going. And then House, he should be that power guy. We need to get him in the weight room, get him on some creatine, blow him up a little bit. Yeah. Also, we need to get some of these young guys and bring them in right away saying, look, man, you're going to be the sixth, seventh, eighth guy, man. We need that sixth, seventh, eighth inning, Tyler Clippard type guy. Somebody comes in that just owns that position. They don't have to be the reliever. They like their role and they own it.
Look, I think, Kurt, maybe that's what they need to spend some money on, man. I appreciate your call as always, brother. Enjoy the rest of your day. Yeah. But, what did I say, though, Max? Every caller that we've taken thus far, what have they all omitted? What have they all omitted? They haven't spoke about the lack of development. The money thing to me is not the issue here. It's a part of the problem, for sure. I'm not ignorant. But you got to draft, develop, and retain talent. That allows you to go spend money. Kind of like the last caller was alluding to. Lap is in D.C. wants to chime in. What's going on, Lap?
Hey, what's up, Lunell?
What's going on, bro?
Happy birthday to DOC and Denton, man.
Yes, indeed. Oh, and, you ruined the surprise. We have something later. Oh, man. But okay.
Okay. I got you. Man, I'm just going to say this, man. I told you guys on this radio station, I said, man, that Nats probably never win another one again. You know what I'm saying? It's just a sad franchise. Yes, I'm going to tell you why. Because I was talking to B. Mitch one day, right? And I said, well, do we have two World Series or one? And he was like, well, it's who you talk to. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, what? Oh, like, do we have two or not? Like, so when you got a franchise, we don't know if we got more than one World Series, but technically we're supposed to, and in which we won that World Series a long, long time ago. That's sad. So the only one we legitimately can count is the 2019 season. So we probably never win again. Now, baseball is a different sport, you know, compared to the other sports. You do have a chance to kind of develop players and build players, and you could probably contend, you know what I'm saying, a lot sooner than other sports. But, man, I just don't like the way they handling it, man. And I'm so glad the Commanders are doing good. I hope we keep that up because the Wizards are sorry. I'm disappointed. The Nats are going to be sorry for a while till they develop. And they might need to sell the team, Lunell. I think Ted just need to buy the team, even though I'm sick of him, too. He almost on my hit list like Daniel Snyder. But I'll take him. You know, at least he's approachable and he'll talk to the media. But the Lerner family is some trash. Straight garbage,
oh my
bro.
Good
and,
okay.
And they need to get it. They need to get it together, man, because this is sad, man. We spent all these taxpayer dollars to get a freaking baseball team here, which a lot of us don't even like baseball. Let's keep it real. You know what I'm saying?
Don't forget, Lap, the city paid for Nats Park.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But
that's tough.
I just think it's going to be a long time coming until they get something together. And we better enjoy the World Series. And we'll see what happened with the development of the players we got because we do got some talent. But we'll see, man. But I'm just disappointed, man. It's just really sad.
Lap, we appreciate you as always, my man. Right now, I want to go live out to Ashburn as Cliff Kingsbury addressing the media before the Commanders hit the practice field.
So you could have gone out and looked for some other jobs, and you didn't. Why did you want to be back this year?
Yeah, DQ has created tremendous culture. The organization has as well, just starting at the top with Josh and then AP, type of people they brought in. So I'm excited to continue to learn from DQ and these other coaches and continue to try to build this thing.
You know, you've added Debo, Laramie, and all that to help to obviously building around the offense and also around Jaden. Just how do you go about like building off of his first year and what things have you seen from him already that maybe he's even improved in?
Yeah, he works extremely hard. I mean, that's all he kind of thinks about is how he can get better and watches a ton of film, watches a ton of football overall. And so that organically really takes care of itself in a way when you have a guy who wants to be that great. And then just the pieces we brought in, high character guys that have done it at a high level, continue to try and take another step with the guys we have coming back. We're just working to get better. I think overall that's a group that's hungry, not just Jaden, but it's a group that's works really well together, very coachable, and wants to improve as a unit.
Cliff, we saw the note you left for Adam Peters on draft night to take Josh Connerly. How was it being the GM for that pick, and why for you was taking an offensive tackle important there?
Yeah. You know, I've known Adam a long time, so we always have fun with each other. But just being around Josh, the type of person he is, his makeup, competitive spirit, the desire to be great, and just he's young. And I think the skill set is definitely there, and the sky's the limit for the talent. I think building it, you've seen our division, the team who just won the whole thing, they built it starting up front. And I think to try and keep up with those type teams, you got to continue to do that and stock that room. Injuries happen. You know, we were really impressed with the line last year and the job they did, but injuries happen and you always got to try and get younger. And the more depth you have in that room, the better you're going to do.
And obviously, I'm sure you had to get away for a little bit after the season, but your communication with Jaden over the course of the last few months, how did that work out? Did you guys meet in person or was it just, you know, text, things like that? How did you guys
text and calls. You know, he like I said, his mind is never very far away from the game, so if he sees something or has a thought, you know, he likes to reach out and talk through it. And so that relationship has really grown, I think, kind of figuring out where we want to continue to get better at.
You talked about Connerly and building up that offensive line. How do you kind of see all those guys? Like, where do you see him playing? Is he a tackle, a guard?
I think DQ said it. I mean, there's really one guy that we see is solidified through and through, and the rest are going to compete and continue to try and get better. And wherever he fits in, he fits in, whether it's starting this year or next year or the year after. You know, that's what I love about this culture DQ has. Everything's earned, and he'll have to earn it as well, and it's a competitive group right now.
And when you when the season ended with Jaden, was there anything you really emphasized to him going into the offseason that you wanted him to work on?
No. You know, he's a guy, like I said, organically it's going to happen as you continue to work with each other, and he continues to figure out, you know, his game and this offense and master the offense. So it was more just get some rest because he wanted to get right back into it. So, hey, get some rest, get away from it, and then attack it. And he's done that. I mean, he is very highly motivated to be as good as he can be, and that's always exciting for the organization.
Regardless of where they end up, how will a bulked up offensive line affect you as a play caller?
You know, that's where it all starts as a play caller. So the ability to you know, have the entire playbook open and feel comfortable with whatever you call, I think it is always made easier on that group is really good. And I thought last year they were tremendous for what we asked them to do, and playing with a rookie quarterback and really helping him along. And hopefully the pieces we added this year will just make him that much better.
What roles do you imagine for Jalen and Ja'Cory specifically this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty loaded group, you know, so they're going to have to kind of get in where you fit in with this group, and there's not a ton of footballs to go around. So both guys have really attacked it. Great athletes, bring a lot of speed, dynamic players, and so we'll kind of see how this progresses throughout the offseason.
You coach quarterbacks in their first year under your system, the second year. How much does it make a difference when a smart kid like Jaden, when he gets to stay in the same continuity of offense and have that muscle memory?
Yeah, it's huge. I think you look traditionally through the NFL, the guys who've had a ton of success have been able to stay in those long-term, the all-time greats, and just the comfort level, and then you being able to take the ownership of it and understand it inside and out, where now you're correcting people. You don't even need the coaches, and he's kind of getting to that point.
We haven't seen Jaden yet on this offseason, but there's been some speculation over some pictures online that maybe he's put on a little muscle. Does he look different physically?
Yeah. I mean, I think he's still pretty lean, you know, but he's definitely worked really hard at his fitness and the weight room. And I mean, he's here early and stays late and does all the things. So I'm sure I haven't seen his weights, but I'm sure that he's a little bit thicker than he was.
And then you saw a lot of Debo in the NFC West. Mm-hmm. How excited are you to have a guy with that much versatility?
Yeah. One of the best competitors I've gone against as a coach, just seeing him twice a year there in Arizona. I was always so impressed with how Kyle utilized him and did different things with him, and he's a football player through and through. Even being out here at OTAs, just you get him on the field, and he's got a natural feel for things as he's figuring this offense out. But couldn't be more thrilled, having seen it up close and personal for those years, to actually get to work with him. He's, like I said, he's a great football player.
Hey, Coach. Second year with you and Jaden, obviously a lot of the conversation is, well, everybody else has a full season to tape on Jaden and also you as a play caller now. How much do you change and evolve your offense for the sake of changing, and how much do you try to anticipate the fact that they do have all that film on you now?
Yeah, they have a lot of years of play calling on me, actually. So every year you just evolve and really try to maximize who you are as an offense. So we'll see where these new guys fit in. We'll see what we did well last year, what we think if we can improve on, and then go from there. But like I said, the guys I've seen that improve year to year are the really hard workers, and that's what Jaden is. So I would expect him to take another big step.
And I don't know if you can really quantify it, but if you can, or however you can answer it, how much are you pulling from your experience from Kyler's second season for Jaden's second season?
Yeah, I think throughout my career, just guys that I've been able to work with in year two, like I said, the biggest deal is just the ownership of the offense and the mastery of it, and where they are very comfortable and checks the line and correcting guys and the timing, the rhythm of plays, their footwork marrying up with every concept. I think that's where really take a huge step. And traditionally, the second year has been a massive jump for those guys.
Hey, Cliff, the running back room specifically, and Brian Robinson Jr., obviously is a big year for him. Up and down year last year, what do you see from Brian, and what do you expect kind of from that room and from Brian especially this year in that running back room?
Yeah, he's been really focused. The biggest thing that came out of last year, I think, was that any of the guys that we asked to go in and play played at a really high level. And you know, Eckler in his role and what he was able to do, I thought it really had a resurgence. And all the other guys, whether it was J-Mac or C-Rod, whenever their number was called, they stepped up and played at a high level. But B-Rob's a guy who has played at an incredibly high level. I thought early in the year when he was really healthy, you know, he was what we expect him to be. And the focus this offseason has been great. He knows what this year means to him and can mean to us when he plays at that level.
Terry McLaurin and Adebo Samuel on the field at the same time. I'm sure you're smiling already. How do they complement each other, their skill sets? How can you utilize them together as a package on the field?
Yeah, both tremendous players. You know, Terry taking the top off, doing the things he does with his route tree outside, always scares defenses. And then Debo, just the myriad of ways you can use him, the touches you can get. He's hard to tackle. That first scan space rarely gets him down. And so just finding ways that he can continue to impact our offense and still get those other guys the football.
And that you saw Jaden bulk up a little bit. Is that something that you and the coaching staff had requested of him or recommended, or did he do that on his own?
I think just through, you know, getting older and working out, I don't think it was anything that we really said, hey, you got to be this weight or that weight. I mean, he knows what he has to do to protect himself and where he feels comfortable playing. But the arm strength, like, he looks better and you can tell he's stronger. There's no doubt.
And when you're bringing in new guys like Debo Samuel, like Laremy Tunsil, how important is this period, this OTA period, as you're learning your personnel and building that chemistry?
Yeah, it can be good. You know, those guys like that have done it at such a high level for so long, they're consummate professionals. They're going to show up ready to go, whether it's training camp or OTAs. But I think a lot of times for the younger players, it's pretty vital to get them in here, get them comfortable, so then in training camp they can compete at a high level and feel comfortable.
Hey, Coach. Hey. When you look at the offense last year and you assess where you all finish, is it any area that you say that this is where we want to be better this year?
Yeah, I thought, you know, ball security ultimately kind of was our Achilles heel late in the season. Had a bunch that we can't do if you really want to be one of those elite teams. And so I think that's an area that we'll harp on all offseason and try to be better protecting the football.
And looking at one of your wide receivers that you signed this year is Jalen Lane. What have you seen from him in this early stage of the OTAs?
Yeah, he can really roll. Fast, dynamic player. Had a great college career there and very hardworking, very conscientious about his preparation, and it's really picked things up quick. We've kind of moved him around to try and challenge him inside, outside, and he's picked it all up. So I'm excited to see how he develops and does in training camp.
Hey there, Coach. At this point in the season, right, it's May, but you, in your role as offensive coordinator, what are you working on right now, and how does that relate to the overall performance of the offense?
Yeah, trying to get the new players of the system, whether it's the young guys, the rookies, or the vets we brought in, really acclimated and comfortable. Some of the veteran guys have a pretty good feel for it. We really streamlined a lot of the stuff we did last year to make sure that this year, with this offseason, was more skill development and not as much scheme. And so really it's about going out there. We're not trying to scheme people up this time of year, but see how you can execute your one-on-ones, win your one-on-ones, work your route technique, things of that nature.
And a popular topic is the schedule, right? Old NFL, you know, schedule drop and all of that. How much do you look at the schedule now, or is it still kind of like we'll just wait until the season gets here and go week to week?
Yeah, I mean, you go week to week, really. The Madrid one will be cool. I'm a big Europe guy, so I'm stoked about that. But other than that, it's, you know, every time that drops, it's the NFL and every game looks tough on your schedule.
Having potentially more talent on your offense, obviously faster, younger, you know, how is it going to be for you to keep everybody happy and not have, you know, these egos come to fruition because maybe they're not getting their call in a particular game?
Yeah, I've never had a great player that didn't want the ball, and so that kind of comes with the territory. But that's one thing I think that DQ has created, where it's, you know, the team above anything else. And these guys that had their success last year and got their touches, they know bringing Debo in, there's going to be less, but we're going to be better. And I think when they're able to sacrifice for that and understand that the ultimate goal is winning, then, you know, it all works itself out. But you want those guys. I mean, they're going to be pissed. I'll get cussed out a few games, but it just comes with the territory. You'd rather have really good players cussing you out than bad players cussing you out. So.
And then, you know, when you look at the receiver room, obviously, with Terry, Debo, and now Jalen to go with Luke and some other guys, do you feel like they're more interchangeable, that you could play them at all the same positions if need be?
We're working towards that. You know, and Noah Brown being back, I thought was huge to get him back. We got to get him healthy. But a lot of guys who understand the system now, played at a really high level, played great in critical situations last year, and so – that'll help the young guys come along. But most of those guys can play either inside or out, which is really what you're hopeful of.
Just one more quickly about the schedule. When you see all these primetime games, do you get excited about the opportunity to be showcased on, you know, national TV, or do you look at it more as it screws up my week of, typical week of preparation?
Yeah, I get more excited for the players. You know, this is why they do it, to be in those moments and playing those games and work that hard their entire lives to get here. So to have their friends, family, everybody get to see them in that showcase, that's really exciting for those guys. So preparation's always going to be tough in the NFL. It's going to be a busy year. I think it's more you got to appreciate when you get to an opportunity to play on those stages. Yeah, I think just mastery of the system more than anything. Like I mentioned last year, had him learn inside and outside, really kind of overloaded him, but you can see the comfort level is there this year. I mean, just watching him move around, he's not thinking as much. He's playing fast and letting his natural gifts kind of take over, and that's what we want to see. So I expect him to take a big jump.
It's Cliff Kingsbury, the offensive coordinator. 301-230-0980, the number, right here on the Kevin Sheehan Show. Lynnell Willingham sitting in for Kevin. Wow. Just heard from Cliff Kingsbury for the first time this offseason, the offensive coordinator of the Washington Commanders. We are 99 days away from the kickoff of the regular season in the National Football League. Commanders out on the practice field today for voluntary OTAs. It'll be the first time the media gets to see the full 90-man roster up close in person. We'll have some developments throughout the show in terms of who's there and who's not, because it is, of course, voluntary. Right now, though, I want to go back out to the guest hotline for the second time this show, where you find our pal Danny Ruye, the co-host of Grant and Danny weekdays 2 to 6:30 on 106.7 The Fan. Danny, appreciate you making some time for us this AM, my man. How are you?
You got it, dude. Doing well.
So wanted to ask you, obviously, as we get geared up for, you know, voluntary OTAs here, the number one thing that's on your mind that you're looking forward to?
This is always so hard because we get to see so precious little, right? I mean, and what they're doing a lot of times is glorified walkthroughs, it's T-shirts, it's shorts, you know, but it's just a reminder of how good the vibes are, right? And that's not to say that no other coach in the past has had that good vibe. I mean, people were enthusiastically coming to Ron Rivera's OTAs on their way to a 7-win season. So it's not necessarily 1-1. No tackles are made. No stats count here from the end of May. But still, it's like just it's almost a chance for me to revisit how magical and how much fun last year was when some of the same names are now talking and walking through that door and, you know, have that same zeal and enthusiasm for kind of getting back to work in the business of trying to win a bunch more football games, building on what they did last year. Ultimately, it's how some of the young pieces fit in, though, as well for me and Lynnell. I'm thinking about, you know, some of the guys that are carrying over from last year, this year's crop of draft picks as well. Where do they fit in? What's Luke McCaffrey going to be this year? Was it, you know, fun project or, you know, guy that's the fifth receiver? Is it, you know, Jalen Lane's time to shine as another gadget player? What's Ben Sinnott going to do? A second-round pick that was an afterthought for most of the season. Things like that, I'm always kind of curious and hungry for when it comes to OTAs. Because, you know, I know exactly what Zach Ertz is. I know exactly what a lot of these offensive linemen are. I know a lot of what, you know, Bobby Wagner is going to do each and every day. There's no mystery there for me, but it's kind of getting those reports that I'm voracious about on some of the guys that we don't have as much data points on yet.
The offensive line, Danny, I would say is probably the most improved position group on this football team, and I think it was really smart on this coaching staff and front office to really target that during the offseason and try and do whatever you can to bolster the line around Jaden Daniels with an improved offensive line. Who do you think, outside of Jaden Daniels, who do you think may be the biggest beneficiary of that?
It's got to be the cadre of running backs, right? I mean, those guys have people like me basically saying, I'm not really interested in that group. I know that, you know, your arms are a little bit sore from the you know, raising them up high and cheerleading for Brian Robinson. For the rest of us, I'm tired of watching a plodding pedestrian, you know, guy with a lack of vision slam into the offensive line and, you know, gain a yard or 5 feet or whatever comes from it. So to me, the running back group that I don't think a whole lot of, I like Austin Eckler, but we know how much, you know, he gets injured.
Right.
You can't overuse the guy. So for me, I don't think much of what they've assembled there. I still keep advocating to kind of go out and market and find somebody and more of a scat back, somebody that's, you know, kind of a, what we used to think of in my day, Linnell, as a third down back.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's now an all down back. That's what you're supposed to have in my view. They don't think that way. They think differently about their running backs. They want more Chris Rodriguez, more Brian Robinson, more Thump. We'll see what Jakowski Merritt brings to the table as a rookie from, you know, late in the draft. But to me, the running backs, who have a lot of people down on them, myself included, if you actually get, you know, maybe some plus run blocking or some better looks against lighter boxes, maybe all of a sudden their productivity goes up and shut people like me right up, right? I mean, that to me is the first thought. I mean, obviously it's about Jaden Daniels, first, sure, second, third, all the way down to like a thousandth. But yeah, to me it might be the running backs where you go, hey, we're getting screwed over a couple of times this year as guys are getting knocked back or not moving the pile. Maybe there's something to that.
Joined right now by Danny Ruye, co-host of Grant Danny over on 106.7 The Fan. You can check them out Monday through Friday, 2 to 6:30. Follow Danny on the X app at Funny Danny. The defense, Danny, is obviously the biggest issue with this football team. We all point to that going into the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
If I told you that I felt like they were worse on that side of the football, what would you say?
Mud, right. On paper, I don't know how much they've improved.
Yeah.
Now, they clearly have a plan. These are thoughtful people, Adam Peters, Lance Newmark and company. They know more than us, and I'm very aware of that. But it's just one of those things where I go back to previous regimes that weren't competent, that weren't very good, mm-hmm, and I would go, you know that LeBron James meme when he's, you know, has the two hands and he's pointing at the guy that was open, right? I think, I don't care if it was J.R. Smith or somebody else, but I'm doing that at a couple different positions, defensive end. I don't really know what we're doing. Look over there.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of spots in the secondary. I would have gone out and upgraded in a major way, most specifically at quarterback. They went, you know, second round draft pick Amos, a kid I like an awful lot. After, you know, going through a couple different schools, but I thought that was a wonderful pick. That was a guy that was a late first rounder in a lot of mocks, early second, to get him where they did. I was thrilled with that. Very, very happy about it. But instead of going after, you know, one of the more marquee names at corner, which I think they have the cap space for, they said, no, we'll go Jonathan Jones. And that's kind of a, you know, he's kind of a Mikey Sandler still sort of player. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Right.
Some versatility and some, you know, some savvy and some chops, but not that world-class, I'm going to lock you down type quarterback. And I think they're counting on an awful lot for Marshawn Lattimore that I frankly didn't see. So I'm sort of looking at this defense going, they don't have as good a pass rush. I still don't know if these answers are there at cornerback. You're razor thin at linebacker, and you may not even care about that just because, you know, you maybe have something in mind for Frankie Louvu, where he's now kind of a poor man's Micah Parsons on passing downs. He's going to be almost exclusively rushing the passer. Whatever it is, I don't know the answer, and I think they do. And that can frustrate fans a little bit when you see something, you go, this looks like a glaring issue. Maybe they've got a great plan for it. Maybe it's awesome. I just don't see it just yet.
So the one area, two acquisitions that they made, Danny, that I look at and go, that's a clear downgrade, and I'm kind of skeptical about it going into this thing. You swapped out John Allen for Javon Kinlaw and Jeremy Chinn for Will Harris. I think most people that watch football will tell you that they downgraded at those two positions. So very curious to see, you know, what those two gentlemen are able to do and how they're able to step up. I want to go back to the offense for 1 second here, Danny. Cliff had a very interesting barb during his pre-practice presser saying, you know, like, I expect to get cussed out a couple of times this year for different guys wanting the football. It now feels like they have a surplus of options on offense. You draft Jalen Lane. You trade for Deebo Samuel. You've already got, you know, Terry McLaurin in-house. Zach Ertz coming off a big-time year. Do you think that a statistical regression could be in line for Terry McLaurin because of the other guys that they have on offense? And do you think if Jalen Lane knocks their socks off during OTAs and training camp, do you think it makes them maybe press pause on a McLaurin extension before the start of the season?
So I think those are mutually exclusive. If Lane is of high quality and is going to be impactful, I don't think that necessarily affects the McLaurin signing or an extension there. That's my own view. Somebody could tell me different, as if to say, hey, we've already got his appearance ready on, or his apprentice and or his a future replacement, you know, kind of ready on deck, and we'll train him up and then maybe franchise Terry for a year and then move on. I don't think it's going to go that way. I think that everybody's going to come together and get an extension done. But the first question, second here, in terms of a regression, I absolutely think that's happening. And it's no reflection on Terry McLaurin.
Right.
He had more touchdowns last year than any other two seasons of his career combined. Those can be fluky. I mean, again, I'm old enough to remember when Calvin Johnson, one of the great receivers in human history, I think had like a 1,600-yard and 2-touchdown season, which ruined a fantasy season for yours truly. So, you know, those kind of things are fluky and can be fluctuated. Doesn't mean that Terry McLaurin didn't improve in the red zone. I mean, it's not awesome, but a 13-touchdown season probably, you know, goes back down to something like 7 or 8, which is still outstanding, still Pro Bowl, you know, still, you know, kind of potential knock on that door of an all-pro team. So I just think those kind of things are circumstantial and they can fluctuate a little bit, right? You think of, as you said, the mouths to feed, the different ways to do it. How many times is, you know, he tackled at the 2 and that touchdown goes to Rodriguez or Brian Robinson or Jaden Daniels on a scramble? Or, you know, how many times does, you know, that one, you know, blade of grass that actually happens to be on the out of bounds line turn into something that's no good and now we got to kick a field goal? I mean, you know, those things again kind of come and go in terms of it. He'd been criminally unlucky over the course of his career, talking about McLaurin in terms of scoring touchdowns. And, you know, last year was kind of an overcorrection for that. So I do expect a bit of a regression there. Plus, you're playing better teams, more good defenses on the schedule, another year for everybody to kind of get, you know, data sets under their belt and figure out how to stop Kingsbury, this offense and company. So, yeah, I think normal regression is expected, but it's not one of those, oh, my God, what happened to Terry? Yeah. He'll be just fine. He's got a track record.
We will let you go on this, my friend, kind of a bigger picture question. Where do you rank Washington on the threats to the Philadelphia Eagles in this conference?
Okay, so you got to run through some of the teams, right? I mean, again, this is the on-paper stuff, and this is what's fun in May. Who knows? I saw that segment that Kyle Brandt did. He's got Tampa as kind of the ultimate threat. Respectfully, I don't buy that, but it's good off-season content. So, all right, who are the threats? Detroit, obviously, on paper, that's a Super Bowl favorite. They should be. They're right there. I wonder how formidable they would have been if Aiden Hutchinson hadn't gotten injured. You know, as they kind of continue to retool this offseason, Detroit has to be one of those examples. They can score with anybody. They're really, really good. Now you get into kind of that level of variance. I'm not really sure how good Green Bay is going to be or how good Minnesota is going to be from that division. I think J.J. McCarthy is going to be good. I think they've got a good program going in Minnesota, but I'm not 100% certain about that when the rubber meets the road. Is this that 13-14 win team or the group that 2 years ago won 7 games? I have no idea. Out west, I think Seattle I've got pretty well pegged is perfectly fine. Not great, not bad. Probably that 9-10 win range. San Francisco is the team that I don't quite feel or understand why odds makers seem to think they're going to be a damn juggernaut. And I'm looking at this old group with a core that's, you know, a bunch of, you know, frankly, a few Hall of Famers. I don't know that they're going to be healthy for 17 weeks. I don't know that all of a sudden they're going to be themselves again. But, you know, Vegas has them as one of the favorites to be a Super Bowl contender. And, you know, there are some folks like me that are going, probably, what's the bunch of guys get hurt? That's a 6-7, 8-win team maybe with Kyle Shanahan and company at the helm. So Washington is certainly in that mix. You know, if you want to put them second, you want to put them third or fourth or fifth, all totally fine. And I'm sure I'm missing a couple teams. Nobody from the NFC South really is a consideration for me. But again, I have no idea what it's going to look like year two with Caleb Williams and company in Chicago and Ben Johnson. If he's as good as advertised, all of a sudden you look up and you go, damn, they got a pretty decent offensive line, a quarterback that's prodigiously talented, and a whole bunch of really good skill guys. That's pretty nasty. Maybe they're a threat. So this is kind of the fun part where you prognosticate and you have no idea with injuries and scheduling quirks and, you know, the stuff doesn't click or best laid plans, et cetera. But the point to me is Washington is absolutely in the mix, even if they don't have like a 12-win caliber season, because they're playing good teams like Kansas City, Philadelphia a couple times. I think Dallas will be improved. They could be as good or better as they were last year and maybe not win as many games just for, you know, crazy circumstances happen. But, yeah, Washington's in that club, I think.
Danny, we appreciate you making some time for us, as always. Make sure you check out Funny Danny and Toby Altizer today on Grant and Danny, 2 to 6:30 on The Fan. Appreciate you, buddy.
See you, my friend.
That is Danny Ruye. Yeah, look, I think what we ended on there with Danny is pretty interesting. He's being open, honest, and objective. You could always count on that from our guy, Danny Ruye. I think it is very fascinating to me. One of the most fascinating topics of this offseason, where does Washington rank amongst the top threats to Philadelphia in the NFC? We'll have a couple of prominent national NFL figures dish on that next. This is the Team 980.
All right, the Nats last night, they fall in a late-night matchup to the Seattle Mariners by a score of 9-1. James Wood continues to show off his power with the lone home run for the Nationals. Pablo Torre has announced, or PFT, or Pro Football Talk has announced, or reported, that Pablo Torre is open to pursuing legal action against the University of North Carolina if the university fails to comply with FOIA requests to produce records relating to Bill Belichick and Jordan Hudson. The Pacers, they took a 3-1 lead over the Knicks last night, 130-121. Tyrese Haliburton with a historic night. He had the triple-double, 32-12-15 with zero turnovers. He becomes the first player in NBA playoff history to with 30-15-10 and zero turnovers. The Oilers, they take a 3-1 lead over the Dallas Stars. They win 4-1. Corey Perry had the game-winning goal. And then two teams looking to close out tonight for the Phoenix. Looking to close out the final blow tonight, Oklahoma City tries to close out Minnesota at 8:30 on ESPN, and the Florida Panthers attempt to finish off the Carolina Hurricanes at 8 on TNT. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1, and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.
It's Kevin Sheehan's show right here on the Team 980. We're always live and free on the Odyssey app as well. Lenoe Willingham in for Kevin Sheehan. As take you up to 1 p.m. Chris Russell is going to stop putting together the new Cap One Arena and put the hammer and hard hat down. And he'll come host from 1 to 4 right here on the Team 980. Big thank you to Danny Ruye joining us. Always love, getting the chance to catch up with him. Top of the 12 o'clock hour. As we start the final hour of the program, I want to get into Lewis Riddick and Kyle Brandt. Lewis Riddick, we know of ESPN, one of the best, in my opinion, football analysts in the NFL, former GM, former scouting director, very plugged in, always respect his opinion. He had some interesting thoughts on who he thinks is the biggest threat to the Eagles in the NFC. And then Kyle Brandt of Good Morning Football on the NFL Network also had some thoughts on who is his biggest threat to the Eagles in the NFC. We'll let you hear from both of those two gents next. But Seth Walder, one of the lead analytics guys at ESPN, just tweeted out the first edition of the ESPN NFL Football Power Index rankings for the 2025 season. Basically, ESPN's power ranking system. At number one, they have the reigning defending Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles. At number two, they have Patrick Mahomes in the Kansas City Chiefs. Number three, Lamar Action Jackson in the Baltimore Ravens. Fourth, Aiden Hutchinson in the Lions. Fifth, Josh Allen in the Bills. And then number six, the old Washington Commanders. So according to ESPN's Football Power Index, he's got the Commanders as the second biggest threat to the Philadelphia Eagles in the entire conference. Let me just be very clear about my thoughts for what Washington has the chance to accomplish in 2025. And I go back and forth on this each and every day because I understand that variance year in, year out is going to be huge in the National Football League at certain spots. And if we're being objective about this, Washington had a horseshoe up their ass at the end of last year. Not saying that they were lucky, but they had the ball bounce their way a lot. And when you take that into consideration, I do have some doubts and reservations about just how good they can be. But then I go back to the quarterback. As long as Jaden Daniels is under center, how in the hell Do you not feel like this team has the opportunity not just to make the playoffs again, but to win the Super Bowl? I don't think I've ever in my life said that about a Commanders team and actually meant it in my heart of hearts. But when you have a bona fide top five guy at the position, you're in the conversation each and every year. FPI rankings got the Bengals as the seventh best team in the NFL. Their defense blows. You know why he's there? You know why they're ranked seventh? Because they've got one of them ones. They have a quarterback. When you have a quarterback that is electric as Jaden Daniels, that is a difference maker the way five is, you can compete with anybody, meaning you're always perennially going to be in that short Super Bowl contender conversation. So, fans out there, some of you out there, a little bit scary to lean into it because you're not used to success. You're not used to being a fan of a winning organization. Get used to it. Get used to it. The days of Washington being ranked outside of the top 10 in a power rankings are over. Look at the quarterbacks that are ranked out of the top 10. There is no elite quarterback on this list outside the top 10. They got the Niners at 11th with mid Brock Purdy. The Texans are at 13 with C.J. Stroud. That one I kind of feel like is a slight. I'm kind of a Texans guy. I think they're going to be a lot better this year than people are giving them credit for. But so on and so forth. All of the elite quarterbacks, the four horsemen plus Jaden Daniels, are in the top 10. So the days of Washington not being favored preseason in a preseason ranking are over. And that's good. That's good. One thing that Cliff Kingsbury hit on as we played some of his press conference for you earlier in this hour, he referenced Jaden Daniels' arm strength being noticeably better.
Whew. Isn't that terrifying to any team that isn't ours?
Absolutely. And it's crazy because it goes back to one of the first observations I had about him. And this is why I'm sad I'm not out there today. Part of my heart is aching right now because getting to see it from the very beginning, you get to see small growth.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first saw Jaden Daniels practice, the first ever OTA practice I went to, I don't know if I told you this, Max, you may have been on overtime with me that very night. He just looked nonchalant, lethargic,
mm-hmm.
Didn't look like he was really putting much zip or spin on the football. But as we came to realize, he's just an effortless thrower, a smooth glider. So it's always going to look like he's not putting forth the most effort. With an improved arm in terms of strength,
it's crazy.
He's already got what they like to call a whip. I think it only gets better.
And the other thing, like you mentioned us doing overtime last year, the thing that we talked about quite a bit was just the way the ball jumps when it leaves his hands.
Yeah.
It's unlike anything I've seen from a quarterback in this town alone, but like it's just very rare that you get a guy with that kind of pop with his arm.
Especially the pop, it jumps off because it doesn't look like he's putting too much effort into it. The other thing that really stands out, it stood out right away during OTA's training camp. Him and Zach Ertz, leaving training camp, I knew Zach Ertz was going to have a big role. I just didn't know he would be durable over the duration of 17 weeks. The ball placement, the touch, the accuracy, like, I think we're forgetting. We haven't seen him in a while. Not everybody's, you know, privy to having the NFL Plus app. There's a certain caged animal that lets me use his on occasion, and I get to go back and watch games. We have a bona fide star at the position, and for that reason, they're always going to be in the conversation as long as he's healthy. 301-230-0980 is the number. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, Lewis Riddick of ESPN and Kyle Brandt of Good Morning Football listed their top contenders to the Philadelphia Eagles in the NFC. What do they think about old Washington? We'll let you hear from them next as the Team 980.